Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey everybody, welcome to HR Latte this morning. This is Rayanne Thorne, your host, and if it sounds like I'm in the tiki room, if you can hear wind and the sea and an occasional bird and maybe a feral cat meow, it's because I practically am. I'm on the island of Molokai right now on a delayed honeymoon with my husband, and we decided to have this incredible experience. We were able to ride some mules down the face of some of the highest cliffs in the world, roughly between 1,600 and 2,000 feet in altitude were those cliffs, to visit Kalawapapa, which is the known as the leprosy settlement here in the Hawaiian Islands. Back when leprosy was first discovered, I think it was in the late 1800s, I want to say around 1881, 82, something along those lines. 1866, I have it right in front of me right here. This area on the island, which is a peninsula that sticks out of Molokai, is surrounded by these very high cliffs. And it seemed to the Hawaiian government at that time that the best thing to do was to banish these patients, these sufferers of leprosy, or what is known today as Hansen's disease, to this peninsula where they could not escape. It was basically imprisoning them for the remainder of their days. And my husband and I rode the mules down the face of the cliff yesterday. It was harrowing, but worth every sore muscle today, worth every nail-biting moment as we made the trek on those 26 different switchbacks down to the settlement where 10, believe it or not, 10 patients, former patients they call them now, because a cure has been found and they are living disease-free, though the ravages of the disease remain. Four former patients still reside on the island, and 10 still reside on the island, and 5 reside on Oahu, where they can get the care necessary. If you are unfamiliar with leprosy, it is a debilitating disease that attacks nearly every system of the body, the nervous system, the skeletal system, the cardio system of the body, and the lungs. It's a horrifying thing, and I would encourage you, if you are unfamiliar, to read up a little bit about Molokai, about what happened to these people. As we learned the history of the leprosy settlement, it was so reminiscent of what happened with the American Indians in the United States with the roundup of these individuals who had no choice and were torn from their families. There was no understanding of the disease, how it was contracted, how it was contagious, how to cure it. And it took many, many years until it was a cure was discovered back in 1969. And the settlement continues because there are still living former, quote-unquote, patients that suffer the ill effects of leprosy or Hansen's disease, whether it is the loss of fingers on their hand or some other distortion, skin distortion, or how people typically passed away from having leprosy wasn't actually from leprosy itself, but from the other diseases, much like what we know of AIDS today. The body is weakened and other diseases conditions like heart disease, pneumonia, influenza, are able to enter the body more quickly and not able to fight them off. But we've studied a great deal of the history of Molokai, about the history of the settlement. Father Damien, who risked life and limb, and indeed he lost his life because he came here to help these patients have some kind of life and get them the medical care that they needed. And during his service, he contracted leprosy and died here on Molokai as well. And the other individuals, Mother Marianne, Brother Joseph Dutton, was one of the most incredible stories, was a Confederate soldier who fought in the Civil War. And when he left his service there, he decided to go to Molokai to serve. And he lived out his days serving the people that were on Kalaupapa, difficult for me to say, and Kalaveo, where many of the patients lived that were banned from being able to live anywhere else. They were basically imprisoned. There is a movie called Molokai that I would encourage you to see if you can. Incredible performances, not the best quality of film, but the performances were beautiful, and it really gave you an idea, filmed right here on Molokai, of what went on during that time. I'm currently reading a book called Molokai, which is a novel based on what these patients suffered during that time. The reason I wanted to talk to you today, and this is an unexpected show, a special episode, if you will, was because of what has changed in me as a result of being here and seeing the people and understanding the story. And my husband wrote, as we were posting pictures yesterday on Facebook, wrote, "Never again," in quotations. And there are so many times in our history when individuals and groups of individuals, like the leprosy patients here, like the Japanese individuals, Japanese Americans in California that were taken to the internment camp during World War II, like the Jews and Israelites during the Holocaust, like the American Indians that were forced off of their land and into reservations. Never again did not reference, never again will we take that mule ride, never again will we come to this island. It meant we need to remember the adversity that these groups that I've mentioned have gone through. We need to remember the inhumane treatment that these individuals in these groups that I've mentioned received. And we need to also learn by their example of survival, that sometimes in our darkest moments, sometimes in those times of fear and sickness and heartache, that there is a light, that there is a way to rise above, that there is a way to turn it into a lesson, that there is a way for you to survive, that there is a way to do life, to do work better. One of the things that I have discovered through all of my writing, through the times of adversity that I have gone through, is that in my study of business, in my study of human relations and psychology, I have learned to somehow use those lessons in life. I call it business for life. And that doesn't mean working for the rest of my life. It means taking those strategies that you know in life, in your work, and applying them to those tough times in your life. We are often thrust into a time of tragedy, whether it's of our own choosing, of our own choices, or about the choices around us, the people that we love, the individuals that we choose to hang out with. And unfortunately, those situations can somehow find us in a place in our life where we feel overwhelmed, overcome, clawing our way out of the pit that we have found ourselves in. One of the things that I have discovered is that there is a way for you to prepare for those times, because they're going to come. If you're married, if you work, if you have a family, if you have parents, if you have siblings that you care for, if you have children that you care for, there will be times of adversity. We know this. It is part of the human experience. And while we might not be able to prevent those times, what we can do is become stronger individuals so that when those times come around, we can pick ourselves up quickly, dust ourselves off, and move on and be what we need to be for the individuals in our life. One thing that I have discovered, and I've shared this with a lot of different people, is that figure out what you're doing currently in your life, in your work, and if it does not benefit you, if you do not learn something from it, if it doesn't benefit or better your life or your work, stop doing it. I've come across several people who misunderstand that, thinking that it is a selfish way of thinking or a selfish way of doing business or living your life. It is not selfish. If you find benefit from volunteer work, by all means do it. If you find benefit from helping those around you, from being the mother where you work or being the mentor where you work or at your church, then by all means do it if it benefits you. But so often we feel as humans we are compelled to do work or to give or to volunteer or whatever it is that we feel obligated to do. We don't enjoy it. It wreaks havoc in our home life or our work life. It costs us extra time, extra money, and there is no benefit to us. In other words, I don't feel good about it. It brings anger into my life or hurt or frustration or time away, or it messes up my schedule. And then I become rattled. And it's almost a way to leverage everything that you do by having this look at the end of that, the end result of that giving or that work or that assignment or that opportunity to give back. Look at the end result and what is the benefit. If you are excited about that benefit, whether it's helping someone else and you just want to give back, that is the benefit. The hard thing is determining, is it truly a benefit? Can somebody else do better than I and end up with a better feeling or result than I? So often we, and I find this is more true with women, we put aside our own needs, our own wants, our own look to see if it benefits us for the needs of others. And then we end up in a state of depression, or we end up in a job we don't want, or we end up committed to a weekly routine that we don't want to be committed to, and it affects every other aspect of our life. So I'm happy to share more on that, but I want to get through this list. This is the thing that has helped me the most in my life and in the decisions that I make and in the choices of how I give back. I benefit or I don't do it. And so you have to find what that benefit is for yourself. It can't be the same thing that it is for me. So moving on from that, be mindful of time that you commit to anyone, anything, right? Be mindful of the time that you commit. And it goes back to, you know, benefiting or not. Be mindful of how much time you spend on social media. Be mindful of how much time you spend in meetings. Be mindful of how much time you spend watching TV. Be mindful of how much time you spend exercising. We can become obsessed in any one area of our life, and then we become imbalanced. So be mindful and find that balance in your life so that when those times of adversity come, when somebody becomes ill, when you find yourself in a relationship that is no longer working, when you find yourself without a job, when you find the need to find a new place to live, you, the rest of your life, you have found some kind of balance and are able to move forward with whatever task is at hand. If it's changing your home life, if it's finding a new job, if it's leaving a job that is causing havoc or imbalance in the rest of your life, right? So be mindful of how much time you spend doing any one thing. One thing that I've really, that's really helped me, I'm not a deleter or a somebody who cleans up after myself very well. My desk is always a mess. My car's always clean, but my desk is always a mess. But I keep my inbox, my email inbox organized. I try not to let a day go by where there is an unopened email. And this can help you also. When an emergency happens in your life or a time of adversity, having that clutter behind you can impact how you move forward and proceed with solving problems at work, solving problems at home, being able to organize your time. So, you know, try not to get caught in the idea of messaging, of emailing, of, you know, having that be your only place to communicate. Don't live in there. Pick up the phone every once in a while. Just a few things that I have thought about over time as I have grown and learned in business and in my life and how to overcome adversity. I haven't talked a lot about what caused my first divorce, and I'm still, you know, struggling with that. Many of my close friends know, and there comes, when you come out of a situation that is unpleasant, whether it's a marriage or a work experience, and I've had both, bad marriage and a bad work experience, sometimes hard to find your footing and come out of that unscathed. And one thing that I have recently discovered about myself is that I was insanely, coming out of either a bad work experience or bad marriage, insanely independent. And I've had to work through that. I've had to find a way to not be so committed to being invulnerable, right? To be avoiding vulnerability at all costs. We enter this life completely dependent upon a parent or a caregiver. This is human being babies. And we require nourishment, care, love, whatever is necessary to make it through those first several years of life. Human beings require other humans to make it to a point in maturity where we have personal accountability. We can survive on our own. It takes a while for that to happen for a human being. So we are born into a community. And what is that community is a single mom, a single dad, a full big family, a caregiving facility, or a home or house where the care is given that is needed. There is never any question as to whether or not a human baby requires another mature individual to grow and develop. We know this to be true. We know it. A baby left on its own could not survive. At some point on this journey of life, we find that we can care for ourselves. And we begin to shun the relief and the concern and the care that others can provide. Well, this may result from a variety of reasons, right? Necessity. We are left alone. We have to fend for ourselves. We have to make it in the world on our own. It could be desire. We want to prove to our families, to our parents, to ourselves that we are mature enough to make it. Often this is what happens when a child graduates from high school or before that and they strike out on their own, whether to go to school or to work or to travel the world, whatever it is. And lastly, hurt. We have been in a relationship or in a situation where we have been hurt by another human being, somebody who has hurt our hearts or our minds or our bodies through some type of abuse. enough to drive us to want and desire solitude. Whatever the reason that drives us away from community, each of us faces a time when we are tasked with personal responsibility, and we either make it, we fake it till we make it, or we fail miserably and we go running back home to friends or family, whatever home is. Or we end up on the streets. There are many different results that can happen from running away from community. Fearing need. I went through that. I went through a very serious, heavy time of where I feared needing someone else because it meant that I had to be vulnerable. So this particular fear, the fear of community, the fear of dependence, the fear of need, usually comes when we become self-reliant or fear being hurt again by another human, by a condition, a time, a place that has at some time or point irrevocably scarred us or tainted us and our taste for dependence or our need for quote-unquote community. There are those who are comfortable receiving help, assistance, comfort from others. There are those who have tasted independence and it feeds their soul. They grow from that. They get stronger. They love not needing another human being or a communal experience. To them, a man is an island, not no man is an island. Perhaps it is merely to prove to themselves or to others, the others that possibly hurt them. I'm well versed in the fear of need. I've had to pick myself up and dust myself off multiple times throughout my life. At the end of an abusive relationship, I went completely Scarlett O'Hara. I'll think about that tomorrow. I'm just going to work today. I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep working. I'm going to keep working. Often working late into the night, caring for my family, working, writing, doing whatever I could to get by. I was never going to need anything or anyone ever again. I would not move home. I would rely only upon me. I would do what I needed to do to move forward, to move onward, to better myself, to find the better way, to complete the necessary education for my desired career, to get the job that I needed in order to get the next job that I wanted, to provide for my children in the best way that I could. And that's exactly what I did. But what developed in the process of all of this, and as a result of my personal continued education and what I like to call the rising of the phoenix, was the fear of needing someone else, of letting someone in, of becoming vulnerable enough to truly love or be loved. And while I was able to prove my worth and become my own sacrificial lamb, I got to tell you, it wasn't that great. I was lonely. I was hard on myself and hard on those around me. And these little addictions began to appear. Not the normal addictions that you think of, not drugs, not alcohol. I exhausted churches and systems of belief. I turned to excessive exercise. I became habitual about writing, about learning personally. And then writing became this passion that I just threw myself into daily exhausting myself. As I mentioned before, I would fall asleep at my computer at night for fear that I was missing something, that I wasn't doing what I needed to do. This habitual display that went on in my life just for survival. And it was great, but it also provided an insane level of imbalance. I bared my soul, and in the process, I built walls. It's kind of a dichotomy, right? One might ask, how can you bare your soul and build walls at the same time? I mean, when you bare your soul, aren't you expressing the ultimate state of vulnerability? Aren't you warding off the villains of secrets kept? Writing became my safe zone. It became my confessor. I could share and thus by revelation become exonerated and accepted. For then everyone would know why I was like I was. Plus, you know, there's this good side of outing every sin, of sharing every mistake, right? I take the power away from somebody else being able to do that to me. I take the power away from somebody else that may know my secrets. I take the power away from them. And I take the power upon myself. Because I was in a place where I would not allow anyone or anything ever to have power over me again. That's a misunderstanding of power, of real power. It's a fear of somebody else being able to hurt me or control me again. It's crazy how that works, or how I thought it worked. So I came to a place where I could actually be born again. I had to learn all over again to love effortlessly, to not question every motive. And it isn't easy. I got to tell you, it's not easy at all to feel and not fear truth or the love of others or what they might be hiding, because I had been hiding stuff for so long. Somebody else that I love must be hiding stuff too, right? Letting go of what do they want from me still requires a daily effort on my part. And it doesn't help that what I do for a living, working for a software company, I'm warding off everybody who wants me to buy something from them every day or wants me to use their service. So what I've learned to do is ask before, what can I give, instead of what do they want? Look, in this life, your friends, your loved ones, your colleagues are going to disappoint you at some time. But you have to at some point find the understanding that it does take a village. I'm going to, you know, concede and give that one to Ms. Clinton. Sometimes in our life, it does take a village. Like Father Damien discovered here on Molokai, like the survivors of the Holocaust found, like the American Indians who were forced off their land and forced into reservations and a way of life that was so different than what they knew. They learned to lean on each other, to care for each other, to help each other get through it, or to reach out and ask for help from others. Whether it's mending a broken heart, whether it's building a new company, whether it's sending your last child off to college. I know I found myself in this texting circle with other moms whose last children are going off to college. The empty nest is very real, and so that's my place of adversity today. It's not how am I going to put food on the table next week like it was 15 years ago. Today it is how will I survive not being a mother that is needed at every moment of every day? How will I survive not being conducting the day-to-day operations of being a mom? It's been something that's been part of my life for 28 years, and all of a sudden it's leaving. So moments of adversity, times of hardship, you know, they scale. Some things are going to be really hard. Some things are going to be only temporarily hard. Some things are not going to seem hard to other people. I battle against the emptiness thing every day, and sometimes it's overwhelming. You do not need to lessen how that feels for you because somebody else says you'll be fine. But there are ways for you to battle it, to find your balance before those times happen. You know, I can't imagine if I hadn't come to a place in my life where I couldn't talk about these things, I couldn't write about these things, I couldn't share them with you, with the audience here, or with the folks that read my stuff, or with my husband. You know, to just say openly, look, I'm struggling with this. I don't know how I'm going to deal with not having children that need me every day, you know. So this show was to share my experiences here on Molokai, to talk about being vulnerable, to talk about not fearing community, not fearing being dependent, not fearing needing someone else in your life. So you as my community, I thank you for giving me the opportunity to share these things, for listening if you are. And I will try, like I do every day, to get up, to move on, to keep learning, keep finding that better way. And with that, I say aloha from Molokai, and I'll see you on Friday when I will be interviewing the Venerable Jerry Crispin, and we'll be talking about what's coming up in HR technology, how has tech impacted the candidate experience, has it provided positive experiences, what else can we do? How can we continue to do that better way? Aloha.